One by one, the city guard assembled in the great cobblestoned yard outside the DeWitt Brothers business headquarters. An impressive three-story building in dark stone that overlooked the docks like a feudal lord's castle. Inside, the hundreds of clerks and customs officers and other paper shufflers kept their heads well down and tried to persuade themselves that nothing of what was going on outside was any of their business. They didn't even have the gumption to look out the windows at the gathering army of guards. Looking around, it seemed to Hawk that more than half of the entire city guard was there, from captains to constables. Even so, they didn't come close to filling the yard. Lamps in elegant frames added to the dim morning light. Still, shadows lay everywhere, and a cold wind blew in from the sea. They would all have been a lot more comfortable inside the DeWitt's building, but of course there was no way such very important people as Marcus and David DeWitt would ever allow mere guards inside their premises. They might need the guard, but they sure weren't going to socialize with them. Hawk pulled his cloak tightly about him. Orders came down from above that the DeWitts were to have full cooperation from every guard, no excuses and no exceptions. The guards should follow the DeWitts' instructions in all things. The DeWitts were connected, so crime was allowed to run rampant in the rest of Haven, while the dock owners used the guard as their own private bully boys.
Fat cats risking our blood and guts.
Fisher looked at him uneasily. She just knew he was going to say something impolite and entirely regrettable to the DeWitts when they finally deigned to put in an appearance. Hawk and Fisher were in enough trouble already with the powers that be. She seriously considered knocking Hawk down and sitting on him while there was still time, but he'd only sulk later. Fisher settled for locating the nearest exit, just in case they had to leave in a hurry. The doors on the balcony overlooking the yard finally opened, and Marcus and David DeWitt strode imperiously out to stare down their noses at the assembled guard. They were both in their early 50s, with the easy elegance and arrogance that comes from being born into lots and lots of money. Their carefully back-brushed and pomaded black hair made their pale faces appear washed out, cold, and impassive as masks. There was a quiet, understated sense of menace in their unwavering self-possession, as though no one and nothing in the world could ever disturb their privileged universe. David was the elder by a year, but otherwise there wasn't much difference between them. They dressed well, but soberly, their only jewelry a collection of thick golden rings on their manicured fingers. David held a cigar, Marcus a glass of champagne. The DeWitt brothers looked down on the guards in their yard, assembled at their command, and they couldn't even be bothered to look disdainful. They looked more bored than anything, as though forced by duty to carry out some petty but necessary protocol. David stepped to the railing.
You are here to protect the docks against any threat, most definitely including the strikers. You are hereby authorized to use any means necessary to ensure the safety of the ships, their cargoes, and the harborside buildings. Your first task is to disperse the mob at our doors and send them packing.
Marcus stepped to his side.
You shouldn't have too much trouble. Just be firm, and they'll back down.
If they don't, then you do what you have to. They're troublemakers. Scum. We want them off our property. Hurt them. Kill them if necessary. But get that rabble out of our docks.
If we kill them all, you won't have a workforce anymore.
We have the zombies. Now that we have the means to control such a number, they will be our workforce. The living are now redundant. The dead should prove much more reliable. They don't need paying or cosseting, and you don't get any back talk from them.
Right. Should have done this years ago.
And what about the people who worked for you all these years? What right do you have to take away their livelihoods, destroy their lives, throw their families out onto the streets? Aren't there enough beggars in the hook already?
Life and its riches belong to the strong, to those who have the strength to take what they want and hold it.
And you're the strongest ones here?
Of course.
Want to come down here and arm wrestle?
Those guards nearest Hawk and Fisher began to edge carefully away from them, not wishing to be associated with such dangerous people. The DeWitts moved forward to the edge of their balcony to get a better look at Hawk.
You are hired help. You'll do as you're told. Is that clear?
Hawk's hand dropped to the axe at his side. He was smiling, and a wild light burned in his eye. Fisher grabbed his arm and held it firmly in place.
Hawk, no! Not here! Not in front of witnesses.
Hawk's arm muscles bulged dangerously under her hand and then slowly relaxed again.
Whew.
Fisher let out a breath she hadn't realized she was holding. The DeWitts glared down at Hawk until it was clear he had nothing more to say. They turned their backs on him and left the balcony. Members of their private guard moved slowly among the city guard, assigning them positions on the harbor side and giving them more specific orders where necessary. Hawk was surprised to see a familiar face approaching him. Mystique was a charming sorceress of no uncommon ability. She had impressed him greatly the last time they worked together. A tall, slender, constantly fluttering figure in her mid-30s, Mystique was dressed in traditional sorceress's black, but the outfit was carefully cut in the very latest fashion to show plenty of bare flesh. She had a long face and a friendly, toothy grin that made her look easily 10 years younger. It also made her look like she was about to take a bite out of you, but then you couldn't have everything. She had a thick mane of jet-black curly hair that fell well past her shoulders, which she was constantly having to sweep back out of her eyes. She had a husky upper-class accent, a disturbingly direct gaze, and wore dozens of bangles.
Darlings, how absolutely super to see you both again.
Hello, Mystique. What the hell are you doing here? You're not in charge of all these bloody zombies, are you?
Certainly not nasty things. Not my kind of territory at all. No, the city council appointed me as official bodyguard to the DeWitts for the duration of their troubles. Just in case the Dockers have clubbed together to buy some magical threat. If it was anyone but the DeWitts, I'd have told the council to go take a long walk off a short pier. But one doesn't turn down the DeWitts. So here I am, darlings, a sorceress of my magnitude reduced to a mere bodyguard. The shame of it. Far too much like real work for my taste. But needs must when the devil vomits on your shoes. And the job does pay well. Both Mumsy and Daddy are getting on a bit now and need a lot of looking after, which means I've been raiding the family coffers just a little more than I feel comfortable with, so...
So we do what the DeWitts tell us and tug our forelocks respectfully if we know what's good for us.
Well, yes, darling. That's life. In Haven, anyway. Though it has to be said that Marcus and David don't have a single social grace between them. I mean, honestly, they've been ordering me about like a servant. I'd wiggle in their wine, but with the vintages they prefer, they'd probably never notice.
Maybe you can tell us why the DeWitts have such a hold over the council just now. They don't normally have this much influence.
Ah, yes. It seems there are a great number of perishable commodities currently waiting to be unloaded from the boats in the harbor. Tons and tons, in fact. And an awful lot of it could go bad really soon if it isn't unloaded in a hurry. The DeWitts are currently paying for widespread preservation spells, but if they have to keep that up much longer, the cost will eat up all their profits. So, dear David and Marcus are caught between a rock and a descending boot. If they let up on the spells, they'll be left with nothing but tons of rotting food. And if they don't supply that food in good condition, they stand to lose not only oodles and oodles of money, but also a whole bunch of very important contracts throughout the city. So they really can't afford to allow anything to interfere with unloading the ships.
And of course the Dockers know all about this.
Oh, of course, darling. Anyway, since the council doesn't want to face a whole city full of hungry people, with the prospect of civil unrest and even riots, for the moment, what the DeWitts want, the DeWitts get. Bend over and smile, darlings. It'll all be over before you know it.
How are the DeWitts controlling so many zombies at once?
They've come into possession of some remarkable magical artifact. Paid a hell of a lot for it, too. Apparently, it makes controlling any number of zombies a piece of cake. I don't know what it is. They won't let me see it. They're also being very cagey about who they got it from. Don't blame them. Nothing good ever came from dealing with necromancers.
Could they really get away with replacing the workforce with zombies?
I don't see why not. Zombies wear out the longer and harder you work them. But there's never any shortage of corpses in Haven to replace them. In fact, the council would probably approve. All the main cemeteries have been full for years, and the incinerators are working 24-hour shifts.
But what about the dock workers and their families? Doesn't anyone care what happens to them?
This is Haven, darling.
And the DeWitts are running a business, not a charity.
The three of them looked around to see the commander of the DeWitts' private guards. He stomped to a halt before them and took it in turns to favor each of them with his glare. Big, broad, and muscular, he would have looked really impressive and menacing if he hadn't been wearing the DeWitt official private guard uniform. Banana yellow with blood-red piping, topped with a rich purple cloak. He looked very much like a bruise with legs. Hawk and Fisher had to bite their lips to keep straight faces.
Hello, Commander Foy. Love the outfit.
Trust me, you're entirely alone in that.
I think my retinas are burning out.
Hush! What do you want with us, Foy?
Commander Foy! I run things here, and don't you forget it!
Foy glared at Hawk and Fisher, who still couldn't meet his eyes.
The DeWitts understand that this is not the kind of work the city guard are used to undertaking. So, to sweeten the medicine, the DeWitts have most kindly authorized me to assure all of you that there will be a substantial bonus to be paid at the end of the day. A very substantial bonus.
Bribe money. Why am I not surprised?
We're not taking it.
We haven't heard how much it is yet.
We don't need their blood money.
Hey, we're going to be doing the work anyway, and you can bet no one else will turn it down.
We're not taking it!
Fisher looked at Foy.
We're not taking it, but I'll bet we're the only ones.
No bet!
Constable Murdoch stepped forward. He patrolled the docks with his younger brother. Hawk and Fisher knew them vaguely from cooperating on a few cases together. The older brother currently stood face-to-face with Commander Foy, glaring right into the man's eyes, while his younger brother stood impassively at his side, as always.
I'm not taking any part in this, and neither is my brother. We're local. Grew up in the Devil's Hook. Our dad worked the docks till the strain of it killed him. Some of those strikers are our friends, neighbors, and family. We'll not raise a hand against them. We're not the only ones, either. Your bosses don't have enough money to make us fight our own kind, not over something like this.
It may not come to fighting. If we're a strong enough presence...
They'll fight. You know they'll fight. They've nothing else left.
We're the law. We're not supposed to choose which laws we'll uphold and which we won't.
Oh, that's rich. Coming from you, Captain. Everyone knows your reputation. You bend and break the law every day.
In pursuit of justice.
Oh, where's the justice here?
Murdoch turned to his brother.
Come on, we're leaving.
And if they fire you?
Murdoch shrugged calmly.
Then we'll join the striking dockers. And the next time there's trouble here, and you can bet there will be a next time, the faces you see over raised weapons might just be ours. What do you do then, captains?
He didn't wait for an answer. The Murdoch brothers made their way out of the courtyard, and no one tried to stop them. But no one else followed them. Commander Foy started to say something cutting, but the words died in his mouth as Hawk gave him a hard look. Foy decided he had urgent business elsewhere and went off to look for it, trying not to hurry too obviously. Fisher took her hand away from her sword. She looked at Hawk.
Murdoch had a point. Where is the justice in what we're doing here?
I don't know. Part of me wants to walk right out of here with the Murdochs, but the law here is very clear. Mob violence has no place in business disputes. If we stay, maybe we can help keep the violence from getting out of hand. Sometimes you have to settle for the lesser of two evils, but there's nothing says we have to like it.
The general growl of conversation among the guards died away as the DeWitts came back out onto their balcony and looked down like generals surveying their troops. As Foy had intimated, the DeWitts began by committing themselves to a massive bonus to be paid once the guards' work was done.
Now that you have our commitment to you, the strikers have refused our lawful orders to leave the docks. You will make them leave by whatever means necessary.
Be careful once you get onto the harbor side. Some of the structures aren't very safe.
The DeWitts seemed entirely unaware of the irony in what they had just admitted.
Do your duty, guardsmen! Your city has need of you!
The first light of true morning spread slowly across the docks as the guards marched down the harbor side to face the striking dockers. Most of the red was gone from the skies, and a thin mist had sprung up. A pearl-gray cloud that swallowed up the ships in the harbor and wrapped itself around the two factions as though cutting them off from the rest of the world. As though nothing mattered but what the dockers and the guards would do next. They were in their own little world now, with no escape from the violent clash that was growing more real and more inevitable with every moment. The harborside shook under the massed thunder of booted feet as the guards bore down on the gathered strikers. The dockers fell silent, but made no move to fall back or disperse. They stood close together, bodies tense with anticipation, their faces full of silent hate and determination. The guards stomped to a halt facing the strikers, and for a long, long moment, both sides just stood and looked at each other. Both sides carried weapons in their hands.
There must be a way to stop this.
In the midst of his fellow guards, Hawk hefted his axe uneasily. Even now, a few calm words from either side might stop a clash. A little give and take from both sides, a few gestures of goodwill, and they could all have turned aside from the terrible thing waiting to happen. But no one showed interest in compromise. Hawk looked away, his gaze moving almost desperately across the ship's masts, rising above the mists like naked trees. And a sudden surge of wanderlust hit him, almost like pain. He felt an almost physical need to board one of those ships and just sail away. Not just from this particularly unpleasant duty, but from Haven and all its corrupting evils. To start a new life somewhere else, to be someone else, someone cleaner. Or perhaps just keep traveling. Hawk shook his head angrily.
I've never run away from a hard decision before. I won't start now.
He looked at the striking dockers, and they looked back, grim and cold, knowing they were damned whatever happened. The tension on the docks was so real and focused now, it almost had a cutting edge of its own. The violence was very close, a scent of sweat and adrenaline, a taste of blood in the mouth. Of men preparing to fight, to bleed, and maybe to die, because they had turned away from every other option. Because it was time. Hawk looked away again, as though by his refusal to take part, he could prevent the gathering anticipation. Like a child who thinks that if he can't see it, it isn't happening. He studied the zombies, still moving slowly but purposefully back and forth, lifting and carrying and even operating the simple cranes with silent, unwavering precision. Once set in motion, they would work day and night with no need to stop for rest or food or sleep. They felt no pain or weariness, and nothing short of major damage or actual falling apart would stop or even slow them down. Whoever they might have been in life no longer mattered. They were just machines now, unfeeling limbs and muscles, moving to another's will. They still had their drawbacks. They would perform a task unceasingly, but if conditions changed, the dead were incapable of adapting to that change. They couldn't cope with even the simplest forms of the unexpected. They had physical problems, too. They were dead, after all, and while zombification slowed the processes of corruption, it couldn't stop them completely. As a result, all the zombies were in varying stages of decay. Some had no eyes and couldn't see, and were limited to only the simplest tasks. Sometimes an unexpected weight or strain would tear a rotted arm or hand completely away. The zombie would mindlessly continue its work, incapable of realizing it no longer had enough limbs to carry the job out. Some bodies were so far gone, they were literally strapped together with cords and leather thongs to keep them from falling apart. A few still bore recent autopsy scars, or even the wounds that killed them. And a few had obviously been stitched together from ill-assorted spare parts. The zombie spell could get a lot of work out of a dead body. Hawk looked hard, but didn't recognize any of the dead faces. He wasn't sure what he would or could have done if he had. Then, no one was sure how it had started. Maybe somebody said or did something, or someone else thought they did. It didn't matter. Suddenly, both sides surged forward and slammed together in the middle of the harborside, and everyone was screaming and fighting in one great milling mass, desperate to hurt and punish the enemy that made this fight necessary. Steel hooks and crowbars faced off against swords and axes. Blood splashed on the ground among the stamping feet, and no one had any interest in quarter or mercy. Because if one side or the other did back down, everyone knew that the side would never be taken seriously again. So they fought with savage fury, spitting their hatred into one another's faces, and within moments, the first dead went crashing to the bloody ground. Hawk and Fisher fought with axe and sword and practiced skill. They had to. The dockers would have killed them if they'd hesitated. Hawk parried desperate blows and struck back with vicious precision, and howling men and women fell before him. There was no time to tell whether he'd killed them. The guards and strikers surged back and forth, the two sides being forced apart into small clashes of fighting men and women as the situation grew increasingly confused. There was no room or time for tactics or planning, just the vicious thrust and parry from every side, and the howling voices of the victorious and the wounded. The strikers outnumbered the guard, but the guards were better trained and armed. Blood flew in the air, spattering those around. The wounded on the ground tried to drag themselves away between the stamping feet. Still, both sides pressed forward, struggling in the milling chaos to reach their hated enemy. Slowly but inevitably, the strikers began to give ground, the rage and desperation in their hearts no match for an army of well-trained, well-armed fighters. The guards' swords and axes rose and fell with methodical brutality as they moved slowly forward, foot by foot, hacking and thrusting, shoulder to shoulder now as they imposed shape and meaning on the battle. They beat and drove the strikers back, and Hawk and Fisher were right there with them. Individual strikers fell wounded or were separated from their fellows. Some guards took the opportunity to take out their anger on those defenseless unfortunates. Hawk saw a constable cut down a man armed only with the splintered remains of a wooden club, and then all the guards nearby moved in to kick the man to death. The strikers broke, turned, and ran. The guards hot on their tails, bloodlust thrumming in their heads. They cut down men and women from behind and laughed as they did it. The battle was over, but the violence had its own impetus now and would not be denied. Hawk saw one guard corner a lone woman striker against a wall. She was visibly pregnant, driven to fight by desperation and need, her swelling belly in contrast to her undernourished frame. She had two knitting needles in her hands, the wood roughly sharpened into points. She quickly realized there was nowhere for her to run, and she dropped the needles and showed the guard her empty hands, but he didn't care. He was breathing hard and grinning, and his eyes were very bright. He put away his sword and drew his nightstick from his belt and struck her across the swollen belly. He hit her across the belly again. He drew back his arm to hit her again. Hawk grabbed the man, swung him around, and hit him in the face with all his strength. The man would have fallen, but Hawk grabbed him by the tunic front and held him up. He put away his axe, then coldly and methodically, he set about beating the guard with his bare hands.
Hawk, what are you doing? Hawk, stop!
Fisher had to drag Hawk off the man by brute force. Hawk didn't seem to recognize her for a moment. The guard lay unmoving on the ground, a bloody mess, but still alive. The pregnant woman had disappeared. Fisher looked quickly around to see if anyone had noticed, but the other guards were still pursuing the retreating strikers. Just as well, Fisher was sure none of the other guards would have understood. Hawk looked at the blood on his hands as though unsure as to how it got there.
It's over, Hawk. The others can deal with the mopping up. Let's get out of here.
This is Haven. Everywhere is just like this.
And that was when everything really went to hell. The zombies suddenly went insane, abandoning their tasks to attack every living thing in sight. They swarmed off the ships and along the harbor side, unliving arms wielding steel hooks and crowbars, and threw themselves on guards and strikers alike. Those without weapons tore at the living with savage teeth and clawed hands. There were hundreds of them, more than a match for the guards and the strikers put together, and the living were already exhausted from their earlier fighting. The zombies tore a bloody path through them, hitting the living from all sides, and the remaining guards and strikers quickly forgot their differences in the name of survival. People who'd been trying to kill each other only moments before now stood shoulder to shoulder and back to back in the face of a far more terrible enemy. Hawk and Fisher fought side by side, cutting down any zombie that came near them. Hawk's axe was proof against some magics, and he quickly discovered that a blow from his axe could at least briefly interrupt the magic animating the dead. He sent the zombies crashing to the ground again and again, and Fisher would move in and dismember each zombie with her sword before it could rise again. It was hard butcher's work, and there seemed no end to it. Hawk and Fisher fought on, fatigue building in their aching arms and backs as they swung their weapons over and over. Undead faces glared at them from every side, teeth snapping like traps in rotting mouths. The recently killed rose up again all along the harbor side, and the line between the raging dead and the helpless families of the Hook grew steadily thinner. Then the mists along the harbor side suddenly came alive, became thick, purposeful strands that enveloped the zombies and tore them apart. The sorceress Mystique had finally arrived. She stood at the edge of the fighting and beckoned desperately to Hawk and Fisher. The zombies struggled against the attacking mists, ignoring Hawk and Fisher as they fought their way through the undead ranks to join Mystique. The sorceress's face was pale and strained as she struggled to control so large an area of mists.
A rogue sorceress taken over control of the zombies. He's overridden the DeWitt's control, which means he's got to be somewhere nearby. And quite powerful. No one I know in the city at present could do anything like this.
Oh, can you locate him?
I'm trying. It's taking practically everything I've got to take on so many zombies with my mist. I can't maintain this for long.
Sweat glistened on her face. Around them, the guards and strikers attacked the beleaguered zombies with renewed strength and purpose, but already some of the dead were breaking free of the mists as Mystique's concentration wavered. Her hands became white-knuckled fists as she fought for control.
He has to be somewhere near. Someone so powerful should be easy to detect, but... No, I can't see him. He must be hiding behind some kind of shield. Wait a minute. If he's shielded, look for gnome magic where there should be some. Got him! Shit, he's hidden himself in the DeWitt's business offices. You two go and get him. I'll stay here and hold the zombies with my mists for as long as I can.
You're the sorceress. Shouldn't you...
I'm needed here. Move, damn you. I can't control so much mist for long.
Hawk and Fisher ran back down the harborside, heading for the DeWitt's business offices. They were already deadly tired, but they forced themselves on, pushing the pace as much as they could. The sounds of fighting continued behind them.
Just the two of us against a powerful sorcerer. Not good odds.
I wish we still had those magic suppressor stones we were issued a while back.
You mean the ones with the tendency to blow the hand off your wrist if you held onto them too long?
Hawk looked back to see how Mystique was doing. Mists boiled around the sorceress, ripping limbs from any zombie that got too close to her. But just as Hawk looked, one of the living dead came up on her blind side, its clawed hand reaching for the back of her head. Hawk started to cry out a warning, and then the zombie's hand closed on Mystique's thick black hair and ripped it away. The whole great black mane of hair came away in his hand, revealing a shiny, bald head underneath. The dead man looked at it, puzzled, as Mystique howled with outrage. Her mists streamed into the zombie's mouth, shot down into his body, and then blew him apart from the inside. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other as they ran.
I didn't know she wore a wig. Did you know she wore a wig?
Shut up and keep running.
Been a real day of surprises today.
They were soon pounding into the cobbled yard before the DeWitt's place of business. Lights shone in all the windows, but revealed no trace of anyone anywhere.
Marcus DeWitt! David DeWitt, show yourselves! Show yourselves now!
No response. Even the private guards in their stupid uniforms were conspicuous by their absence. Hawk and Fisher hefted their weapons and moved cautiously forward. The front door stood slightly ajar. Hawk pushed it slowly open with one hand, tense for any response, but all was still and quiet. Hawk pushed the door all the way open, and he and Fisher charged forward into the hall beyond. What remained of the DeWitt's personal guard lay scattered the length of the hall. They lay still where they had fallen, eyes staring unseeingly, their weapons mostly still undrawn. Whatever killed them hit them hard and suddenly. Now they just cluttered the hall. Fisher glanced as she ran by.
No obvious wounds. No discoloration to the face, so probably not poison. Something just sucked all the life right out of them. Our sorcerer's been busy.
Maybe he's using their life force to maintain his control over the zombies.
They stopped. Hawk looked quickly about him.
Ugh. If so, then the odds are that everyone else here is dead too. I suppose it's too much to hope that he got the DeWitt.
Oh, concentrate on the business at hand. If the sorcerer is as powerful as Mystique thinks, there could be all kinds of defensive spells between us and him.
And one'll get you 10, he already knows we're here.
They moved cautiously forward down the hall, stepping carefully over the dead bodies, weapons at the ready. But nothing and no one emerged from the shadows to meet them. They checked each room leading off the hall, but found no defensive magics. No creatures appeared out of midair. No elementals descended suddenly upon them from the spirit realms. Only more dead, struck down wherever they happened to be when the sorcerer cast his spell. Hawk and Fisher ascended the great stairway to the end of the hall, the backs of their necks tingling in anticipation of the attack they'd probably never know till it hit them. They stopped at the top of the stairs and looked about them. Closed doors and unmoving shadows looked calmly back at them. Fisher hefted her sword unhappily.
This is wrong. There should be all kinds of nasty surprises protecting a sorcerer this powerful.
Unless he isn't really all that powerful. And it's taking everything he's got just to keep his zombie spell going.
In which case, I vote for charging right in and killing the bastard before he realizes what's happening.
Hawk looked at her fondly.
Oh, that's what you always suggest.
Yeah, and most of the time it works.
Can't argue with that. All right. We listen at each door until we hear something magical. Then we burst in and I'll race you to see who gets to him first.
Go for it.
They padded cautiously down the landing. At the third door, they heard a voice droning quietly. Hawk and Fisher shared a quick look and a nod. Hawk lifted his axe, but Fisher stayed him with a raised hand. She tried the door handle, and it turned easily. Fisher turned the handle as far as it would go, and then eased the door inward an inch. The hinges were mercifully silent. The air was sharp with tension, like the sea just before a storm breaks. Hawk counted down from three with his fingers. He hit the door with his shoulder. The door flew open, and Hawk and Fisher charged into the room, weapons raised, only to crash to a sudden halt as they saw who was waiting for them. The sorcerer sat cross-legged in midair, floating unsupported above a wide, chalk-drawn pentacle on the bare wooden floor. Dressed in sorcerer's black, he wore robes that hung loosely about a lean, almost emaciated frame. His shoulders were still broad, but his large hands were just bone and skin. They wavered unsteadily as they moved in slow, mystical passes. The dark robes hung stained and shabby, nowhere near as impressive as they had once been. The same could be said of the sorcerer. His pale aquiline features looked drawn and strained. The dark, deep-set eyes shone almost feverishly bright. He no longer shaved his head, and his hair had grown back in a dirty gray. The sorcerer turned his head slowly to look at Hawk and Fisher, his thin mouth moving in something that might have been meant as a smile. Hawk's first thought was that the sorcerer looked like a drug addict too long from his last fix. Squatting on the sorcerer's left shoulder, a small blood-red demon, barely a foot high, with a pinched, vicious face and flaring membranous wings, leered at Hawk and Fisher. A long, slender umbilical cord ran from the demon's swollen belly to the sorcerer's neck, where it plugged seamlessly into the prominent artery.
Hello, Hawk, Fisher. I knew it would be you who found me, if anyone.
Hello, Gaunt. Been a while, hasn't it?
The sorcerer Gaunt once single-handedly cleaned up the Devil's Hook, killing all the villains, and made the place almost civilized for a while. It all fell apart after his forced exile from Haven. A good man in a bad city, Gaunt drew his considerable power from a succubus, a female demon he called up out of the pit and bound to him at the cost of his soul. He used evil to enable him to do good, and had no right to be surprised when it all went horribly wrong. The succubus was destroyed, and Gaunt lost his power source. Hawk and Fisher saw it happen. Gaunt had been their friend then.
Jesus, Gaunt, what the hell happened to you? What the hell do you think you're doing now?
But I have to.
You look half dead. And what is that ugly thing squatting on your shoulder?
My new source of power. When I lost my lovely angel, my succubus, most of my magic went with her. I couldn't protect the hook anymore, and all the scum I drove out came rushing back. Wolves with endless appetites returned to prey on the innocent. So I left Haven in search of new magic. But after what happened to the succubus, the only demons who would answer my call were nasty little shits like this one. It's really no more than a parasite, feeding me magic in return for the life force it drains from me. Not the best of bargains to enter into, but I didn't have much of a choice.
From what I remember of your succubus, you've just traded one addiction for another.
The demon glared at Hawk, stretching its mouth impossibly wide to show sharp steel teeth. Up close, it looked like a living cancer, bulging red and traced with purple veins. It stank of sulfur and the pit.
In the end, power is all that matters. That's all I have left. You want to know how I could do something like this to myself, don't you? Ah, Hawk. I was already damned long before you met me. That's the price you pay for bargaining with the pit, no matter how noble your intentions. Trafficking with demons like this was no trouble at all to what's left of my conscience. I needed powerful magic again, to do what had to be done to save the hook. I failed them, you see. I promised them they'd be safe. Promised I'd protect them from the bastards who used and preyed on them. But in the end, I couldn't back it up. Now I can. I have returned. And this time I will clean up the docks and the Devil's Hook for good. The dead shall be my soldiers, and no one will be able to stand against them. I will spread such horror through the city that no one will ever dare oppose my will again.
Your zombies are killing innocent people right now. They're taking down guards and dockers, men and women putting their lives on the line to protect their families. Or are you saying you can prevent the zombies from slaughtering defenseless people in the Hook?
No. Some of the innocent always have to die for the greater good.
They're killing everything that moves. You don't have any real control over them.
You're wrong, Hawk. Wrong. I planned this all very carefully. I created the zombie control device with a little help from my friend, and I sold it to the DeWitts. Suitably disguised, of course. They didn't know it was me. But I knew they'd never be able to resist such an opportunity. Yet all along, the control device had my spell hidden at its heart, so I could override the DeWitt's control at any time. I knew Marcus and David would be too greedy to look beyond the profits to be made by replacing living workers with zombies. And that greed has brought their doom upon them.
Are they dead?
Unfortunately, no. They ran like rabbits at the first sign of trouble. It doesn't matter. My zombies will track them down later.
There isn't going to be a later. Your zombies are killing innocent people. That has to stop now.
I thought you, if anyone, would understand. The DeWitts weren't the only ones considering the introduction of zombie labor. This carnage I've organized will make people too afraid to ever think of using zombies again. I'm saving thousands of jobs here, Hawk. Saving lives and livelihoods all over the city. It's regrettable that some will have to die to bring that about. But you should know, there are no real innocents anymore. Not in a world where the good must damn themselves to hell to gain the power to do good. So don't talk to me of death and suffering. I face more pain and horror than you can imagine.
Stop this now. Stop it and we'll find a way to save your soul. It's not the hardest task we've faced.
Gaunt, no one has ever really lost who truly repents.
But I don't repent, you see? I wanted power and I willingly paid the price. I failed so many times. I never did become what I wanted to be, what everyone said I had the potential to be. I never achieved the things I meant to. I couldn't even protect my friend William Blackstone. Never mind the people of the Hook. I have to win this time, Hawk. I have to win just once. Whatever the cost.
And we have to stop you, whatever the cost.
You can try.
Gaunt gestured almost lazily with one hand, and a bolt of lightning shot toward Hawk and Fisher. Brought up his axe and the lightning glanced away from the great steel blade, smashing through the closed glass window and dispersing in the outside air.
It's not that easy, is it? Most of your power and your concentration is tied up in maintaining control over the zombies, isn't it? That's why there weren't any defensive spells downstairs. You're not nearly as powerful as you used to be, Gaunt.
I don't need to be. I have all the help I need.
Hawk and Fisher looked around sharply. Fisher ran over to the door and looked out. All of the DeWitt's private guards, dead once, but raised again by Gaunt's augmented will, came stumbling down the landing toward her, still wearing their stupid canary yellow uniforms. Fisher slammed the door shut and looked for a lock or a bolt, but there wasn't one. She put her back against the door and braced herself to hold it shut. Heavy fists slammed against the other side of the door, followed by the thud of dead shoulders. But Fisher held the door shut. She dug in her heels and glared at Hawk.
Do something, Hawk! We've got company!
Hawk looked at her and then back at Gaunt, lost in concentration over his spell. Hawk knew his duty, but he didn't want to do it. The sorcerer had been a good man once. He was still trying to be, in his own mad, twisted way. And once, he had been Hawk's friend. Hawk looked at Gaunt, torn with indecision, searching desperately for a way to avoid having to kill a man who had once been his friend. The sorcerer ignored him. He knew better than to try to cross the chalk pentacle surrounding the sorcerer. He'd seen such things before. The power harnessed in those innocuous-looking lines would fry the flesh right off his bones. Hawk hefted his great axe, aimed, and threw it. All in one strong, fluid action. The axe neatly severed the scarlet umbilical cord linking the demon to Gaunt's neck. The cancerous thing toppled backward. Gaunt cringed in shock and pain as the source of his magic cut off. Hawk charged forward, crossing the now harmless chalk lines without hesitation, his attention locked not on the moaning sorcerer, but on the tiny red demon. The creature leapt to meet him, moving inhumanly quickly, just a blood-red blur as it shot through the air to slam against Hawk's chest. Hawk staggered to a halt as its clawed hands and feet sank into his chest, the demon's membranous wings flapping madly as it fought for balance. Hawk grabbed the demon with both hands. Blood soaked the front of his tunic as he lurched back and forth, tearing at the demon. And then its severed umbilical cord whipped through the air like a striking snake and tried to attach itself to Hawk's throat. The parasite needed a new host.
No!
Fisher abandoned her post at the door and ran forward. Fisher didn't dare look back. she crossed the chalk pentacle, grabbed a handful of Gaunt's hair, and pulled his head back so she could set the edge of the sword against his throat. Tears ran down the sorcerer's face, but his eyes were still closed in concentration.
Stop this, Gaunt! I swear I'll kill you! Stop this!
No, you won't. Deep down, you know what I'm doing is right. There has to be change in Haven. The guilty must be punished. For everything we've done here has been for nothing.
Hawk's going to destroy your demon.
It has already given me enough magic to see this through. And you won't kill me, Isabel. I was your friend.
Fisher looked across at Hawk, struggling with the demon. It was trying to plunge the end of its severed umbilical cord into Hawk's neck. Hawk gave up his hold on the demon's body to grab the umbilical snapping end with both hands. There was an unnatural power in its jerking movements, and it took all his strength to keep the sucking end away from his throat. With a lucky snare, Hawk caught the tail and plunged the sucking end into the demon's own distended belly. The cancerous face looked briefly startled. It released its claws from Hawk's chest. He threw it away from him. It tumbled in midair, then sucked its whole body inside itself, then vanished in a puff of paradox.
Well, there's something you don't see every day.
Zombie bodies fell to the floor.
Huh?
Hawk spun around to see the DeWitt's private guards lying slumped and lifeless on the bare wood floor. The nearest was an arm's reach away. Out on the docks, the sound of fighting had also come to a halt. Hawk looked at Fisher. She was standing over Gaunt's dead body, blood dripping from the edge of her sword. She met Hawk's gaze unflinchingly.
I had to do it while he was vulnerable. He would have never given up control of his zombies. They were his last chance of power. His last chance to be somebody.
Isabel.
He would have let us both die.
Yes, you're right. I think he would have.
Hawk went over to pick up his axe. He hefted it once and then put it away. He looked expressionlessly at the sorcerer's dead body.
He was misguided. He meant well. I thought of him as a friend.
That's why I killed him. So you wouldn't have to.
Afterward, it was mostly about cleaning up. The striking dockers went home, taking their dead and wounded with them. The guards called in surgeons to tend their wounded and began the slow process of clearing the debris off the harbor side. The zombies, calm again without Gaunt's influence, went back to work. The dockers' demonstration was over for the moment, but both sides knew it would have to be fought again and again until someone surrendered or there was no one left to fight. A few hardcore zealots on both sides wanted to resume the fighting right then and there, but calmer heads dragged them away in different directions. There had been enough death for one day. Hawk and Fisher walked slowly along the harbor side, stepping around the pooled blood, already dark and drying. All of the dead had been removed. Both sides had a dark suspicion that the DeWitts might see the bodies as raw material for their zombie workforce. Guards stood in small clumps, drinking and smoking, smiling and laughing and celebrating their survival. Hawk remembered some of them showing unforgivable brutality to the fleeing dockers, and his hand moved to the axe at his side. Fisher took him firmly by the arm and guided him away.
Gaunt was a good man once. He really did clean up the hook for a while, but this is what Haven does to good men.
Hawk, find a way to separate your sentiment from reality. Gaunt was a power junkie who sold his soul for magic long before we ever met him. How good were his good intentions if evil sat at their core?
They walked on a while in silence, leaving the docks behind them as they made their way back into the Devil's Hook. The grim, gray tenements were strangely quiet, subdued for the moment by the news of what had happened in the docks. The few people on the streets gave Hawks and Fisher's guard uniforms hard looks.
So, we saved the city again. Hark how the grateful populace applauds us.
We saved Haven for the DeWitts and their kind. The dockers didn't deserve what happened here today.
It's politics. I've never understood politics.
All you need to understand is that the situation in the docks is still unresolved. This will happen again. More dead guards, more dead dockers. Only next time, I'm not sure which side I'll be fighting on.
Hawk looked straight ahead of him, not even glancing at Fisher.
This isn't what I came to Haven for. Certainly not why I stayed.
We stayed because we thought we were needed. Because we thought we could make a difference.
How do you feel about working and living in Haven now? How would you feel if I suggested we leave?
I go wherever you go, my love. You know that. But can we really leave with so much still undecided? Turn our backs on all the evil running loose in the city? Last time I looked, we were still the only honest cops in Haven.
I'm worried, Isabel. I'm worried about the lack of purpose and direction in my life. I'm 35 now. Not old. Definitely not old. But I'm not young anymore, either. When I was younger, I thought I'd have my life sorted out by now. That I'd have made all the big decisions in my life. I can't help feeling that I'm just drifting, that I've lost my way.
I've never been that ambitious. We survived the long night of the Blue Moon and the Demon War. Anything else was bound to feel anticlimactic after that. Hell, I fully expected to die back then. Every day since has been a bonus. We're doing a good job here, mostly. Saving people, helping people. Settle for that.
We used to be heroes. Everything we did mattered.
You really want to leave Haven?
Oh, where could we go that would be any different?
A messenger from a far distant land burst suddenly into their path, swept off his hat, and bowed deeply to them both. Hawk and Fisher came to a startled halt and looked at the messenger as he sank to one knee.
Prince Rupert! Princess Julia, at last I've found you. You must return at once to the Forest Kingdom. King Harold has been assassinated. Only you can uncover the truth, bring the killer to justice, and bring peace and hope to the Forest Land again.
Hawk turned dumbfounded eyes on Fisher, looked down at the messenger, kneeling patiently before him, and then glared quickly about him. Gratefully, he noticed that no one seemed to be paying any special attention. But this was Haven, after all, and the North Side, too, where absolutely nothing went unnoticed or unremarked by someone, if only because you never knew what might turn out to be valuable information later on. Hawk found his hand had dropped to the axe at his hip, and he moved it determinedly away. No amount of violence was going to get him out of this dilemma. It was the name that threw him. The damned name. No one had called him Rupert in a very long time. He was a different person then, leading a different life in a very different world, one he thought he'd escaped forever.
I should have known better. The past never really lets go of you, and family ties are the strongest of all to the past.
Fisher scowled down at the kneeling man. Even when she'd been Princess Julia of Hillsdown, she didn't appreciate courtly manners.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Alan Chance, Your Highness. I believe you knew my late father, the champion of the Forest Kingdom.
Never mind who he is. Details can wait till we get him off the street. You, Chance, get up. I never did like people kneeling to me. And no more of that Your Highness stuff, either. Isabel and I are captains of the City Guard, and we have a reputation to live down to.
The messenger rose gracefully to his feet and smiled charmingly.
As you wish, Prince Rupert.
Oh, hell. We have to get him off the street. God knows I don't want to hear whatever it is he's come all this way to tell us. But we're going to have to talk to him, and the last thing we need is an audience. Did you come alone, Chance?
No, he didn't.
Hawk and Fisher looked around, and there, facing them, was the biggest dog they'd ever seen. His great blocky head was on a level with their waists, and his long, powerful body swelled with muscles under gleaming dark brown fur. Half of one ear was missing, and his mouth stretched in a wide, not at all friendly grin. He had large, sharp teeth, lots of them.
Damn, it's a talking wolf.
I am not a wolf. Wolves are stupid, irresponsible, and they run in packs because they're afraid of their own shadows. I am a dog and proud of it. Chance is my companion, and I'll thank you to adopt a much more respectful tone when addressing him. And if you even look like threatening him, I'll bite your arms off up to the elbows, and that's just for starters.
Hawk was pretty sure the dog meant it. He tried a calming smile on the animal, who didn't look at all impressed. Hawk wondered if he should try and pat the dog's head, but one look at the great teeth was enough to make him abandon that idea. He wasn't too sure just what kind of dog it was. The coat varied in color from all shades of brown to black at the head and white at the large paws. The face suggested half a dozen breeds, all of them unhappy at the mix. If every dog in the world got together for one great canine orgy, a dog like this would probably be the result.
This is my companion.
Chance moved to stand beside the dog.
His name's Chappie. He was watching my back, or more accurately, your backs, just in case. We weren't actually all that sure how you were going to take being discovered after all these years.
But he's talking here.
I am very nicely, too. I pride myself on my diction. And just so everybody's very clear about this, I am not Chance's dog. He is my companion. I do not wear a collar, fetch sticks, or come when I'm called if I don't bloody feel like it.
How is it that you talk?
Oh, I used to live with a high warlock in his dark tower. I mean, you hang around with a crazy magician long enough, you learn to talk. It's no big deal.
The dog padded slowly forward. Hawk and Fisher had to fight down a strong urge to back away. Chappie sat down and scratched briefly at his ragged half-ear with a back foot.
We've met before, but you wouldn't remember me. I was just a pup then, just another of the high warlock's animal experiments. There were lots of us once. Now, hold still so I can sniff your crotch, piss on your leg, and otherwise act in an objectionable manner. It's all part of my doggy charm.
I think we'll pass on that, thanks.
He looked at Chance.
That dog has too much personality for his own good.
I know. Trust me. I know.
We have to get this pair off the street and out of the public eye. They're just too weird, even for Haven.
Our lodgings are too far. Where can we take them that's nearby in private? Somewhere we can be reasonably sure of not being overheard.
The Dead Dog Tavern. It was pretty decent drinking before that last hygiene scare.
You want to take us where? If this is the kind of establishment that has dog on the menu, I will personally demolish it, set fire to the ruins, and piss on the ashes.
It's just a name. Now shut up and stop attracting attention, and I'll get you a biscuit or something.
Oh, well, whoopee.
The dog made no other objection as Hawk and Fisher took Chance by the arms and hurried him off. No one around seemed particularly surprised. They were used to seeing Hawk and Fisher hustle people away, whether they wanted to go or not. The dog took one last look around before following the others into the alley.
Maybe a dog's life would have been better.